So my name is Carol Hervelt, and I'm going to kick the technical conference off. This is for Questar's Integrated Resource Plan for the plan year June 1st, 2014 to May 31st, 2015. And it's Public Service Commission Docket 14-057-15. And what I thought we'd do is just do the introductions, and then we'll turn it over to Questar. So,
I'm Barry McKay. Work at Questar in the regulatory area.
Dan Martinez with the office.
Brent Coleman with the Attorney General's office on behalf of the office.
Carolyn Rural Division.
Carol Revelt, Commission Staff.
Scott Johnson, Questar Gas.
Glenn Watkins, Questar Gas, Gas Supply Area.
I'm going to stop our guys. I want them, because what we've done here, and we'll go to what we do with our presentation, just to make sure everybody knows some of their responsibilities as it touches the IRP, because we have them here in case they need to answer any questions today. Better start over, Scott.
Scott Nelson, Questar Gas, Gas Supply, and I do the modeling, the most important part. All those graphs in the back. What I really hope is that after today's over, you take down the ones that you had in frames from last year, replace them with this year's ones, put those in frames, and then your kids and grandkids can color on the ones from last year.
Between the lines.
You invited it.
I did. I invited it. This is good.
Glenn Watkins again. And I do lots of pieces in the IRP. A lot of people contribute to it, but I do a lot of the introductory section and a lot of the cost of service gas and purchase gas, and, multiplicity of sections.
Thanks. No, I just want to make sure they know what parts we play.
Doug Wheelwright, Division of Public Utilities.
Eric Ford, the division.
Kelly Mendenhall, I have nothing to do with this document.
We're calling you out on it, man. You calculated the revenue requirement amounts in the...
I thought about that after our conversation yesterday,
right,
about the
cap. I guess I did that.
Dave Lyon with Questar Gas Regulatory Affairs. I work on the customer growth and gas demand forecast, most of those in Section 3.
Peak day model, those things too. Okay.
Marty Powell with the division.
Thad LaVar with the commission.
Jamie Dalton, commission staff.
Bela Vostog, Office of Consumer Services. I enjoy reading every word.
Of course you do.
There you have it, Glenn. You feel good about this.
Bill Schwarzenbach with Questar Gas, Gas Supply. Primarily responsible for nominations and scheduling, but also work on contracts. As far as the IRP goes, focus mainly on the gathering, transportation, and storage section.
Brad Hasty, Engineering Department.
That was kind of weak. You better come up with more.
We work on the system capabilities and constraints section.
Also putting together the D&G action plan.
Right, which is included.
Yeah, so in that.
Mike Black, Operations Engineering, Questar Gas, the same.
I guess Mike also does the system modeling analysis. Mm-hmm. I'm Matt Bartol, Questar Gas Engineering. I'm supervisor of our distribution engineering and kind of filling in for an associate of mine who's in Alaska right now, and he does the high pressure.
My name is Tina Faust. I work in gas supply, and as far as the IRP goes, my job is to nag legal and regulatory. That's pretty much the whole head job.
She does more
to get
than
it
that.
On time. Get it done somewhat on time.
Tina's been responsible for it for years, and it certainly has grown with more parties within our company participating in it. We did bring a few extra copies. We have other copies if people want hard copies. We know we filed it electronically, and sometimes people want to just focus on that, but I did just bring over three others, and I don't know if the office...
Do you need any more?
I think we're good. Okay. Office wants
one. We might need one to refer to if someone's
ready. I've got my copy, too. And I'll give you two copies of the division, and we'll give one here at the office. And if you guys want more, if the commission wants some, we can get some into your hands. Tina, you're the main star.
Okay.
We're scattered.
You've heard all my jokes about engineers, and so I can't tell them again, unfortunately, although some of the engineers might not have heard them. But. So we'll just start. Just a review of what we've done so far this year as far as the IRP process goes. On February 25th, 2014, we had a very full agenda. We talked about the schedule, review of the order, so we made sure we were all on the same page. The lost and unaccounted for discussion that had come out of, I think, some comments from last year, if I recall.
It's part of the order, too, yep.
December 5th weather event, that was on everybody's mind, still pretty fresh. And the nomination timeline, we'll discuss so everyone kind of understood some of the issues we went through on that day. The February price increase, we were kind of experiencing it still, and it just hit some $27, $28 pricing, I think, right before that meeting. And then we talked about Wexpro 2. Then we had a break until April 2nd, and Mike Platt spoke about the master planning of the system at this meeting. Gas control, we had some people from that are shared pipeline Questar gas employees that work in our gas control room to talk about what they do, and then the Monticello event that happened on Halloween, Von Tosted discussed.
Remind me of what the Monticello event was.
Northwest Pipeline Williams had an issue with their upstream connection to us. I think it was a 12-mile line. I don't know, did he give that much detail?
Yes.
Apparently they did some maintenance and forgot to open the valve. Okay. And so some people in Monticello were cold on Halloween night, unfortunately.
That was a code word for we lost the entire town.
And a lot of them were away on volleyball and basketball, if I remember right, camps, but they were out of town. And so they weren't cold, but then there were some issues about getting them, yeah. There were some issues about getting into their houses, and I think it eventually got worked out within a couple of days.
Yeah, now I remember.
Okay.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. We handed out Halloween candy, though. Don't forget that.
April 30th.
Didn't bring any today.
Yeah, we should have. We'll discuss the heating season review. It's pretty much we felt like we were done with the heating season at that point. We reviewed the RFP. Basically, that's purchase gas that we were recommending to purchase for next heating season. We talked about the annual demand, peak day forecasting. I think that was Barry talking about energy efficiency. We had someone from our environmental group talk about clean air and the fuel cycle. And then we had a report on Lakeside 2 by Mike Gill to finish it up that day. So far today we were just kind of going to give a quick summary and then open it up for questions mostly, because that seems to have worked in the past rather than try to give you a full summary of the 200 plus page document. So anyway, the different parts, basically these are the sections that are covered in the order that they're presented in the IRP. There's an introduction and background that I personally think is the most interesting, that Glenn wrote about the winter that we had and that they had in the east, and then what's going on in the industry. Customer demand forecast, that's also pretty interesting. I guess I shouldn't offend anyone.
Giving you a shout out there.
Yeah. So Dave, that's Dave's portion, as he mentioned. System capabilities and constraints, otherwise known as engineering, BNG plan. The purchase gas section, the cost of service gas section, which is everyone knows as the Wexpro portion. Gathering, transportation, and storage, it's always changing. And then energy efficiency programs, mostly the results, I think. And then the send-out modeling results, which is the majority of it, which is Scott's contribution. So we'll go.
I'm sure everybody is aware that the electric company does an IRP.
Not as often, I've heard. But
yeah. Well, in any role today, my question here is that on their IRP, it really is a forecast. It's mm-hmm. broken up into, say, I think if I remember right, the next 2 to 4 years in their action plan, what they're planning on doing in 10 years. Ours here is only a year out. For the part. So I want to focus on that year out.
Okay.
So as we go through this overview, can you kind of indicate where we're at in terms of executing that first year, this next heating season?
So do you want to talk about the DNG action plan or purchase gas?
Purchase gas primarily is what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, we can, just because you narrowed us to a year, we'd like to observe that we actually provide 20 years of forecast.
Well, you can talk about all 20 years if you want.
The reason you see us focus mostly just on the 1 year is that that currently is how we're going about doing our purchase gas.
Right, and that's what I was...
We have some multi-year...
Purchase gas.
But why, let's walk them through, talk about that section. Do you have a copy, we can go to that section.
Oh, do you want a copy?
I've got a copy.
Okay, all right.
I'll look over Barry's shoulder. You had a slide in a previous presentation.
Yeah, we'll just need to give it to Dennis.
Here's purchase gas.
And you can just work it in as we go through, I'm not asking you to do...
Actually, I mean, just to...
We're open up for questions, so...
Yeah, you're perfect. We recognize that this IRP process is almost an... this one begins when we opened it up last February. We've been doing and responding to what we thought were real-time questions. For example, the Monticello one was not anything that we necessarily even have a write-up in here, but it's what some that people wanted in reporting. We try to respond to them in our technical conferences leading up to it. We know you've really only had a couple weeks. Some of you just devoured it immediately, I'm sure. Others might...
It's like you had a surgery or something.
Might not have. But we think you're going to have other questions throughout the year. What questions you have, and you did, this is exactly what we want. What questions you have right now, we want to take them, we'll walk through them. Carol's reminded us that at noon we're out of here because there's another meeting, and we're done sooner. But that you are to the part we wanted, so let's walk through the purchases.
I just want to make a comment about the pricing of purchase gas that we typically report. It's usually a comparison of a Questar Pipeline first of month index from the previous year. That's going to be changing next year, just so everyone has a heads up, because it's not published anymore as of July 1, I believe. And so there's still a daily price. I'm not sure how long it's going to survive, but the monthly price that we compare is no longer going to be relevant. So we'll pick Northwest Pipeline or something like that. Just like we did on the few months that it wasn't posted in the past, we picked an alternate, we felt like, similar price for that.
Well, this goes to what we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah. So, and everyone should know that that's going to be something that will be impacted. We're going to have to pick a price, a purchase gas price, and we're going to have to include that in our pass-throughs. And Tina's pointed out what we have here. We were able to complete this year's because they still had that information, but they're no longer going to be doing a Questar pipeline.
First of month.
Yeah, first
so
of month.
So when you do your RFP, you'll have to say, give us your cost of...
Well, it'll be Northwest Pipeline Index, Kern River Index. It'll be another index, typically, because a lot of times they won't give us fixed price bids. These are just kind of historical, back-looking, comparing a year gap, you know, in a heating season. This isn't really meant to be representative of what our actual purchase costs are, just kind of an overview of what prices are in general.
It's
we'll have to pick a different point to compare next year.
It was very nice. It was convenient. We knew for sure that that's where our gas was. But it's not that big a deal. They'll give us Northwest Pipeline minus a couple of pennies or plus a couple of pennies or Kern River. So it just needs to have something that'll be linked to. So
you why didn't you give the actual then?
It was the actual first of month.
Yeah, but what in the future you could say what you actually paid.
Oh, we always do that.
Yeah.
And that actually
that's a different report.
But yeah, but this one, when we put a forecast together next year, is what Tina's saying, we're going to have to do it based off of a different pipeline index. And that's all.
Or even historical, because we'll have some of the months available from 2014, but not all of them to compare to. So, and it won't be an option on the RFP, based on Carol's point there. Very few people were using it as bids for us because it's been less and less reliable. Mm-hmm. So they were bidding on other indexes anyway.
Oh, okay.
So it's just, you're going to see a different heading on this page next year. Just so that's clear. As far as what we were proposing, talks about peaking supplies that were offered, 145 gas supplies packages from 15 potential suppliers. Everyone understands there's a lot of permutations and combinations. Similar packages of gas offered under different pricing terms. 1,217 Monte Carlo draws were evaluated. Then it was selected, and I'm trying to find the total. Maybe that's why you were asking.
how much we actually...
It was in last, it was in the last technical conference presentation we picked. You're asking...
Where were we at in terms of execution?
Okay.
They've been executed.
So we, yeah. Meaning that we purchased.
I want to say 17,000 base load on Questar.
Additional 17,000.
Yeah, we have $30,000 a day wintertime base load that goes for 17 more years or something, and then we add an additional 17,500 of base load for just wintertime. That's all tied to first of month index, not daily, so we're hoping to avoid any exposure to daily prices like we saw last winter. Then we've got peaking contracts that are exposed to daily prices on both Questar and Kern River. And I believe it was about 65,000 of Questar peaking and
130,000
for Kern River peaking.
And then throughout the year, you will convert those to some.
We're not anticipating that. We didn't do that last year because of the 65% anticipated hedge through Expro.
But we can
if people feel strongly about it.
This is a good moment for discussion, is that we've typically in the past, when we only had about 50% being cost of service, we would fix throughout the year up to somewhere between about 60. It could go, we went as high as, did we go as high as 65,
you're talking about,
70?
It depends if you're talking about heating season or year-round.
But we... retreated from executing it in that fashion now because we felt like we already had essentially a hedge in prices, and we have purposely chosen to be able to get the benefit of market price being at a lower rate. Now, if we want to, we've got to have discussions, because essentially the way we came in to doing that in the first place was discussions with the division and the office. And it was back in 2001 that we came before this commission and said, hey, we would like to see if you're going to agree on this agreement settlement that we had. We put it before the commission that was an agreement that we would do. And the commission approved that we could, one, go and do that type of fixed pricing, hedging. We had puts and calls involved with that, and that we would do that amount. But it was never a you thou shalt do. It was that we wanted you to use your best judgment and put it within this range. We think the range is being covered right now by our cost of service gas. But if others think that we ought to go beyond, we could do that.
No, that's not where I was going. I was just trying to, in my mind, fix a comparison between what we do on the electric side versus the gas side.
Okay.
Especially for this first year.
Yeah.
And all that is different between the two utilities.
Not knowing everything that Rocky's doing, because they kind of like to not let us know.
Well, they do have their front office transactions, but the point is that we do the IRP, but it's right on top of executing those actions, for at least for the next heating season.
Okay. Yep.
And that's what I was getting at is, so we're reviewing the IRP today, but for the next heating season, we basically executed everything.
Right. And essentially, it's almost real time. We showed up on the
30th. Right, and that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, we showed, hey, this is what our plan is. Here's our contract that people want to do. And I think the division and the office have typically come over. They've looked at those. And then the next day or two, Tina and Will and everybody, they go and execute it.
Right.
And then I just yapped on about how we fixed them in the past and we don't.
And that's fine. That's good.
We're not planning to. I mean, we're keeping it open for next, if things change and production declines or demand increases, you know, that changes that percentage. But right now, for next heating season, we're not planning to.
Okay.
Other questions?
Yeah, I have a question. I don't know much about the electric side, but this is maybe confidential. But when they go out for their RFP for gas, it covers years. Companies required to give them years worth of gas, 4 years, 10 years. It seems like when you send out yours, you only get a year at a time.
We put out,
you know why?
The RFP for up to 3 years for all the different scenarios. We typically don't get more than 1 year or 2 years.
Is it the way the RFP is written? Is it the suppliers you go to?
I think it's because we're a wintertime heating season. If we could take 4 years straight of baseload gas, would be a much more attractive market. because we don't have any load in the summertime, we're not going to buy base load, and because we have a huge amount of our own production, you know, it's, we're a much smaller buyer of gas than I'm assuming electric would be, or than we used to be.
And we do have 30,000 dekatherms a day of long-term base load contract that's been going on for a number of years. I think it's, what, 30-year contract?
Or it was like 25, and we're 5 or 6.
So to answer your question, we have 30,000 a day that we committed to for 25 years based on, is it first month? I don't know what the price
is.
Yeah, it's an index price.
It's an index price. So, yeah.
Oh, that's right, we changed it.
So we have had those that are longer.
Yeah, well, you used to have some 3 years and some 4 years.
And we still ask for it in the RFP, so I don't think the RFP part's changed. But the model, you know, kind of figures into it, too. It doesn't choose those necessarily. And it also means, you know, I think less people really give us the 3-year options, so.
Yeah, Tina's explanation of why they wouldn't value us is we're not that big of a demand for them to be able to sell something for a long period of time. You've been asked that question, already did too. For some that might not have read it, I wouldn't mind calling out just a few either changes or differences that are in this year's IRP in the sections compared to last that you can look for or call out. And I'm only going to do the ones that I'm going to remember right now.
Okay.
But I know in the customer demand and forecast area, we added a section that talked about something that on a national level we are very much championing. And we didn't do a big write-up in it, but it has a few paragraphs. And that's the identification of source-to-use comparisons when you're going out and determining what...
What do you mean by source-to-use?
It's greenhouse gas or emissions.
It's greenhouse gas emissions. It's going to play into efficiencies on appliances. It'll impact our energy efficiency world, too. But it's greenhouse gas emissions. And we talk about the full fuel cycle that should be considered. That's the source to use. That's what I'm meaning there. And we are trying to champion that strongly as an industry. So the natural gas industry is very strong there. And you can obviously figure out why, because when you do that comparison, there is a significantly smaller impact on the environment, greenhouse gases, as well as a significant change in the efficiency of your appliance comparison when you do it from there. We think that's the right way. That's a new thing. We're going to be talking about that also in our advisory group meeting that's, I think, coming up tomorrow with our energy efficiency group. That's one thing that's new, not that we need to have big discussion on it. Another section that has some new things in the cost of service, we've added the Wexpro 2 discussion. Will, why don't you maybe just tell him a little bit of update. He's focusing right now on trying to make sure that if we can't be putting the gas in.
Excess gas.
Yeah.
So one thing that's different in that section is at the end of the section, I believe it is, we actually have a forecast for the shut-ins for this year. That's based on the send-out model and the forecast that we get from Wexpro. We calculate the projected shut-ins. You'll see there are, I believe it's 10,000 a day of shut-ins that we're expecting in June. We actually did not experience them this June, so we are a little bit off that schedule. And that's primarily we've been able to get injection above our allocated amount. So we've been able to put more into our storage. Our storage started off very low this year, which I think is a general trend throughout the country right now, that everybody's storage is low. But our storage started out low, so we've gotten some additional injection, and we did not have to do those shut-ins primarily in June so far. We are looking ahead to July and seeing if we do have excess gas, as was specified in the stipulation, I think it's section 14. We are looking at that excess gas and evaluating that based on the market price and the cost of shut-ins, and calculating whether or not we should look to sell that any portion of gas at that point that's excess. So that's ongoing. We think in July there's a possibility with price forecasts that are out there, we may be selling some in July. Just if those forecasts come true and prices go, forecasts right now are going over $5 for prices in July. We're not seeing them yet, but that's the forecast. So we'll wait and see what happens with that forecast and when we have excess gas and we're going to look to sell.
Do you think in the future on this section, I read through this and I was wondering what kind of analysis you do, because there's no detail, just as we did the analysis, here's the numbers. And so
We didn't put the details in there because the details on the analysis are actually included in section 14 of the stipulation, so we didn't feel like we should duplicate those. The analysis is really, we look at the shut-in costs by NOM group that for all the cost of service production, and we subtract that from the 12-month rolling average price of the cost of service gas. So we subtract that, we take that, we say if it's $5 for the cost of service gas, actually lower than it's $4.67. And we subtract, we look at how much excess gas we have, we find out the carrying cost or the shutting cost of that excess gas, and we subtract it from that overall cost of service. So if you're at $4.67 and you have 20,000 dekatherms of excess, and that carrying cost is, and I'm estimating numbers now, it's about 15 cents or something like that. You subtract the 15 cents from the 467 to give you 452, and you look at the price on the market. If you can get greater than 462 on the market for the gas, then
452.
But if you have carrying costs, when you add that to
You would think, but really no, it's because you're paying those carrying costs one way or another. Uh-huh. Right? So you want to you want to subtract that from the cost.
So it's in the stipulation. I can go.
You can go ahead. It's section 14 of the stipulation.
But if you're paying it one way or another,
we're going to have to pay that, okay? Uh-huh, yeah. So that's what our carrying cost. So we know that's a sunk cost. So can we, minusing that from what it is out there? In other words, our cost of service is at $4.67. On his example. Uh-huh, there. Uh-huh. And we're going to have a carrying cost. So if we can get up to where we are indifferent, which is minusing the carrying cost out of that, and in his example, that ends up being $4.52. If we can sell something for more than $4.52, we should sell rather than keep it, pay the shut-in costs, and move forward. That's the key thing. We're just operating in that way until the rest of the stipulation kicks in, which is at the end of this IRP year.
So that calculation's ongoing. We're continuing to look at it with market prices again if the forecast goes up. We did have a small amount of shut-ins. I think it was Easter weekend, but it was back in April. There was unseasonably warm temperatures. Clay Basin was down for the Clay Basin test. And so we had a little bit of excess gas. We did try and We did that calculation, we looked at what our price was, and we couldn't get anybody to buy it at a price above that calculation. So we did have some shut-ins for a weekend in April.
And we've begun reporting our shut-ins in the last year's IRP, which we still are going to have the last quarter that we'll be reporting on. We haven't been able to compare those shut-ins to any forecast. But this year's IRP that now has a forecast of shut-ins in it, we'll be able to report on how we did compared to what we had forecast. And that probably is a good segue to another thing. We've tried to call out specifically so that we're all clear that what we'll be reporting and comparing our variance report to throughout the year will be what we call our normal case. I always use my own term of doing it based, but I got educated that sometimes that could be confusing. And so, but that's what we will file our pass-through cases on. It's what we'll be doing our comparisons to. And there's a paragraph there, too, that we just called out to make sure that everybody knew. In our reporting, too, we want everyone to be aware that we typically, particularly in the customer demand and forecast section, we have reported in that section calendar year information. We also, in our model runs and everything, we have IRP year. Well, IRP years become a key thing because of the settlement in the Wexpro 2 document. So this year you kind of have a blended bit of information. We're in the process, Dave just is so thrilled that he gets to do this, but we're in the process of trying to go back and we'll need to restate some of these forecasts, not forecasts, this historical information into IRP calendar year. You can expect that next year. This year, I said calendar, I shouldn't have said that. IRP year, and you won't have it in calendar year come next year. Because we thought, and I've just done a really good job of probably confusing you, and that's what we didn't want to do.
But you'll keep all the historical stuff there and just
know that it's different. Yeah, we'll have all of that, but we're going to try to make the IRP be just IRP year in the future, and you won't have a mix and a match of it. We'll still have all of the data. We absolutely will keep it that way because we'll still be doing some financial information.
But you have to have IRP to compare the 65%.
Right, yeah,
yeah. And that becomes...
For demand, like forecast demand.
That we'll be needing to do it.
Eric, yeah. Maybe one on these the shut-in costs. And then, can you go to that appendix A?
Oh yeah.
Explain what that is.
I'll try.
Okay.
First of all, it's a very small appendix.
It's the very last page in the whole document.
So it was based on a report and order. It was me trying to answer the question, I guess, of the report and order.
This is last year's
October
commission order responding to what the office had wished could happen.
Okay.
So they asked for a scenario analysis. So maybe we should ask somebody else to...
No. I mean, this is our best effort. If we've missed, we obviously will try again, but this is what we... So keep walking them through what we thought we were doing.
So the question was, what would you do if cost of service changed compared to the forecast and demand changed compared to the forecast?
Okay.
And so, since we're talking about cost of service volumes being 70-ish BCF in round numbers, really, if you're thinking, it probably doesn't make sense to vary it by 50% or, you know, so we did 10%. Scott helped with this as well. So we looked at what would happen, how much would be shut in on an estimate, making a lot of assumptions based on storage, inventory, and injection ability. And if cost of service ended up bringing, we ended up with less Wexpro gas or more Wexpro gas and demand was higher and lower, what would happen to shut-ins?
So it's just a forecast.
And then it also asked for associated costs. So that's the second part.
Table. So what we have here is in the normal case, that number of 2.3 will?
Yeah, 2.387.
Yeah, that is the volumes that we have forecasted that would be shut in.
Which would go along with the table we were just talking about.
Yep.
At the end of...
For this year.
That section.
And then from that midpoint on that mid-table
on 6.6. So if you took that times it by the number of days on 6.6. These are all estimates. Obviously, we already have said June at that. You're not going to see those numbers when we look back because June we didn't shut in any gas.
Well, I guess my confusion was, if I look at the dollars, there's not a lot of difference in the dollars.
Right.
But there's a lot of difference in the decatherms above.
And if you recall discussions we've had, we never really got a huge amount per day on 6.6. And so if you remember, the first 17 are pretty small costs.
Okay.
So the only difference is when you're worrying about that above 16, then it starts going up a little bit per decatherm. But the costs until you get to 50,000 or 60,000 a day of shut-in, they're pretty small numbers
and
for shutting in.
And those are total numbers. So again, that if you divide, you're saying the numbers are pretty big. But if you look at, you know, the 2.4 million BCF or 2.4 BCF in the normal case, and then you look at the worst case, which is 10% lower demand and 10% higher gas production, you're talking about, I don't know, 500,000 decatherms there, and that's spread over now an amount of time. So it's not 500,000 decatherms, or it's not, you know, just
one
over a week. So you've now got to divide that by figure out how many decatherms a day. So you really could be, you know, 500,000 decatherms, if you spread that over 50 days, you're talking 10,000 decatherms. So the difference when you look at the carrying cost of 10,000 decatherms a day, when you're at that low of a level, doesn't really kick you into that much additional cost. Does that make any sense?
Okay.
It looks like a bigger number when you look at it in the total, but really if you consider that those shut-ins are spread over a number of days, it's not that much additional shut-in per day, which is, means it's not that much additional cost.
Because you're still dealing with pretty small daily numbers.
Okay.
With pretty small, you know, if it's 20 cents a decatherm, you're not, that's not going to add up that much because of the 10%, plus or minus 10%. And maybe whoever, if that doesn't answer the question, we can look at other scenarios. We just took a stab at it.
It also goes back to why we try and manage the supply over the summer so that we don't have big shut-ins at one period of time. You know, we try and spread those shut-ins, keep them to a lower number for a longer period of time, because if you're shutting in a smaller amount for a longer period of time, it saves a lot more money than if you shut in a bigger amount for a shorter amount of time. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Which is the plan, but of course you've got production changing, demand changing, yeah, storage changing, all those things that we're trying to micromanage and end up just being frustrated because we can't control anything. So.
You know, one of the things that Will said, that you had some gas that you were going to try to sell and you couldn't sell it. Mm-hmm. Have you done an evaluation in the summertime about if this kicks in, can you even sell the gas?
Depending on market price.
Yeah, you can always sell the gas. It's a matter of whether you can sell it at
well, the Wexpo price is, you know, pretty high.
Mm-hmm. So that calculation pretty much gives you a floor of your gas price, right? That's the lowest price you can sell at and still have it make sense. So that gives you a floor. So if you can't get that floor price for it, sure, then you shut it in.
So until Wexpo price becomes cheaper than market price, you won't be able to sell it then.
But it looks like August it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's what's different about this summer than any summer I've seen for years. It's actually got a higher price, and there, you know, people, you have debates over why it's higher than $2 or $3. But yeah, because they're trying to fill storage, yeah, prices,
you know,
are...
One of the things, though, is that even though it looks like on the curve when you've gone down and the prices have gone down or up in the past, because you have to pay higher royalties, it's got to be like, it's not like if it goes up 50 cents, it's going to, you know, if there's a 50 cent difference, because Wexpo price is always going to go up if there's higher royalties.
But the problem is it's a lag, right? So if it goes up a dollar next month, we'll be able to sell that, or the stipulation will tell us to sell that because it'll be $5.50, say. And people will want to buy gas, you know, at the price that we can offer, and obviously we're not going to offer the lowest price, we're going to offer the market price, so we still make more money during that time period. But the lag, the price we're comparing it to, is the 12-month most recent information we have.
For Wexpo.
So you're going to do the 12 months rolling average.
That's what we compare, yeah. And sometimes there's even a lag with that. So it's not, if we're selling for June, or say August, because that's probably when it would happen, we're selling on the day, and we're not looking at a 12-month lag that ends July. We usually don't have information that's that current. It's going to be June. April, or... I guess May is the month before June.
We have May's right now. So Wexpo has been very accommodating in what we used to just get on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, we'll give this to you on a monthly basis.
And you're going to start including that in
Yes. And so all of our charts that you'll see as it relates to Wexpro cost of service or just the cost of service will be on a monthly basis now. You've seen it just be annual in the past. We'll continue to have monthly first month prices, but Tina's also pointing out that we'll look depending on the day and we'll see what we might be able to sell that day. We're trying to become, and we've used the word nimble enough to be able to make a sale or a transaction even down to a daily now.
Well, daily is really the only way we can do it with things changing so much, because we don't want to sell the gas for a month and then have to go out and buy gas at a higher price potentially because of demand, you know what I mean? So
right, yeah,
it's really put a lot more, I guess, burden. But it's not a perfect process, like you pointed out. In hindsight, August prices might go up for Wexpo gas, and we don't have that information when we're making that decision. So,
yeah.
And I don't know if there's a better way to, if there's a better formula. There could be.
In talking with the office and the division in Wyoming, OCA, we thought our best path was to try to stick with the most recent cost of service, and so Wexpro was good in being able to get us the data in. So every month we'll be getting them what the most recent 12 months is, and then we'll be able to react accordingly. That's different. I mean, we certainly haven't had it in the past. And we'll keep reporting them. Right now, the good news is that we're able to be putting it into storage, we're being able to use it, and so that is the best situation, is that we either can use the gas or have it be able to go into storage.
You know, one of the things in the variance report that you had the last time, was there were problems with what was in the IRP numbers for storage. And
yes.
Has that been corrected?
That's actually the heart of the issue that I'm talking about on the normal case. We didn't discover until about the second quarter in our variance report that we had picked a base case last year that was significantly, I think I'm going to have to use the word, significantly different than what normal weather would have produced. It still was a reasonable, accurate draw from the Monte Carlo, and we ended up picking that one, but it became glaringly obvious to us that we had picked a base case and were trying to do comparisons that did not make sense. And so as soon as we discovered that, we put into our variance report the normal numbers, and we put normal. Going forward, you're not going to have to worry about that because we picked normal essentially as our base case.
For variance purposes.
For variance purposes going forward. So this next year, you will see just our base case / normal be according to normal weather, and it won't be according to a variation from normal weather, which is what last year's ended up being. And
so does that mean that, I'm not good on the modeling stuff for this, okay, but do you even need to do that anymore if all you're going to do is pick your normal weather? I mean, do you need to do all this fancy modeling anymore?
Yeah, because I need a jar.
No, I'm just curious. I mean, if you're going to pick, this is kind of going back to what you did before.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you're...
Deterministic.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It's so deterministic as far as the base case, but I'll let... All right, Scott.
Yeah,
I like what you ask because you may be talking to a person that asked the same thing when we had an internal let's kick this around issue.
Uh-huh.
They completely convinced me for at least three reasons. Number one, the commission's ordered us, and I really thought that was a good reason. And they wanted us to do Monte Carlo. Monte Carlo approach is having it be a random approach and going through and giving some variance or some confidence around what your case might be. In the past, to go way down your back, is that we picked our normal, and then we just said, okay, well, what's a +5 and what's a -5?
Right.
And we didn't have a whole lot of reality behind what these cases might be. Scott now runs these Monte Carlo and comes up with real life scenarios of what they will do in that instance when it is a +2 or a -7 or a +5. And so we get a grouping around all those different options of what we would do in picking the patterns of purchases, in picking what we would do for our cost of service. What we have here is a deterministic, we've got to stick with normal for what we file on our pass-throughs and what we do our variance reporting on, but we absolutely want to see what the Monte Carlo results are and the parameters surrounding those numbers. You could set them aside if you wanted to, but
that'd be great. So we have had a question a couple of years and wanted a sensitivity analysis ±10%. And I feel I did not do that analysis this year, but the last 3 years that I have done that analysis, stochastics gives us like 11 and 12% on either end, plus or minus, you know, 10 to 11%. So I feel really good that when we do stochastics, we're making that sensitivity, except we're doing it by allowing stochastics to do it instead of, you know, individually varying certain parameters to try to come to that same grouping.
And what stochastic variables are you looking at?
Temperature, heating 3 days by month, and then prices. So a mean standard deviation on those two factors.
And how many draws are you doing per run?
I did...
You did 1,200 this year.
I did 1,271 on the RFP,
yeah.
And I did more than that on the IRP. I can't remember, 1,400 or 1,500.
It's a good discussion. I mean, we certainly kicked it around. We felt like we needed to have a base that, and we felt a little uncomfortable trying to predict something other than a normal weather pattern.
Well, it's a validation, I feel.
That too.
We had 1,700 draws, 1,705 in the IRP.
Just a couple other differences, and really, when you say differences, they're just additions. Others from our group could jump in. In the gathering, transportation, storage area, we did put in a paragraph or two as it relates to our next 5 years already, as it relates to how long we have contracts for transportation, how long we have contracts for storage. We're starting to see out there in the industry, it's wise for us as parties come to us and want to begin to talk to us about those things, that we wanted to give you a heads up that that's where we're at as far as needing to renew contracts. And so that'll be something we try to have on a consistent basis going forward.
So did you talk about Rickman? And,
yep, we talked about Rickman. We have Northwest.
Magnum, yep.
Magnum.
712.
Sorry, I'm jumping between storage and transportation there. But we talked about our storage contracts that we have.
We also had a section in there this year kind of highlighting the aquifer usage.
Yep.
We felt like we got a lot of value and really used our aquifers a lot this year. They helped with offsetting some of those high prices in February. They helped with some of the limitations that we had at Clay Basin this year, this spring. So we put a section in there specifically addressing that and specifically showing that aquifer usage in those times, just because of that.
The LNG peak shaving facility.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
That's a study that we wanted just to have out there as potentially going right at the heart of potential storage options that we might have down the road. And we felt like that would be a prudent thing for us to see if there is a path that, does it cost as much? Is it a whole lot more? Is it a whole lot less? We think a prudent utility would take a look at that. And so we're just trying to be proactive. And the reason we did it this year is that if, in fact, that were something that you would choose to go and do, we would bet that that might be more than a month or two for siting issues. And so that's why we went out.
And it wasn't a very detailed study. It's kind of a high-level cost study.
This is developing your own storage?
Mm-hmm. Well, we could go out for an RFP to go and do that. It's obviously something that we've seen out in the industry. Pipelines have gone and done it. Yeah. LDCs have gone and done it. We're not necessarily in the business of doing it right now as an LDC, but depending on what the costs are, where the siting of it might be, the flexibility of what you could have with it, it could be a reasonable, good path for us to follow in the future. It has some potential benefits in how it would be filled, too, helping us meet some of our issues with how we take cost of service gas. We just went out and wanted to see what it is. We figured that people would want us to have looked at all alternatives as we we'll be making a decision on what we need to do going forward here. I can't remember, when is the storage contracts?
18.
In 18. So we're definitely a few years out in front of that.
So it'll take a couple of years to build a big shaving facility.
More than that.
Yeah.
It's not like we can wait till, you know, a month before the contract renegotiation and start evaluating.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we thought if that one particularly, we thought that we needed to be out at least 4 years. If in fact. Yep. And that's why we went out with the study, which is what Doug's pointing out.
So are there feelings, plus or minus? I mean, do you have good or bad feelings about LNG? Are there perceptions that are... Okay.
I just don't know what the study said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My perception, I think it's certainly... Certainly you'd want to dig into it a little more.
Yeah.
With the pipes that you've got running right through here, the north of the valley, I mean, the current intersection, pipeline nearby, and the way that could be used in the industrial park. Seems like it's a...
No, we
certainly deserve some deep insight.
I'm just asking because Williams had a event recently, and I didn't know if that what the public perception was negative about LNG.
I don't know. I don't speak for the public.
Who does?
Well, you know, the siting of these has to be so far from places. I mean,
yeah, the lake keeps going down, so there's new property coming available. Don't know how it'll do during a wet year, but hey.
Yeah.
No, we recognize that, but I think what Eric just said is we also saw that potentially you could really have some great leverage opportunities, depending on who would want to choose to participate in it. And we're not blind to the fact that we could choose to do it. We need to come before the commission, but we're on just the beginning part of it. And we think that you definitely will see it as analysis that we would compare to when we make a choice. Do you go with that? Do you stay with what storage you have? Do you get somebody else's storage? I mean, Rickman's come with storage. We're going to have storage from our from Questar Pipeline. You want to look at all of those. You're hit with industrial, but the other thing, so let's speak to it. Just as we were filing this, the EPA came out with a significant proposed rule. When we say significant, it could significantly impact the natural gas industry. We toyed on what we would want to put into this document. We erred on the side of, let's not say a whole lot because we don't know a whole lot yet. But we're certainly stepping back and wanting to see how that might impact particularly the electric industry and what might happen here, and that could go right along with it.
So. I have a question on this new rule about the GGE equivalent for
gas
the
gas gallon equivalent.
Yeah, for the
we're not
CNGs.
Happy with what happened there. We're still trying to fight.
So essentially the price had to go up like 10% as of the day it came into effect, because
it's a measurement issue that we still are hanging in there and getting gallons being able to be used. There's some that want to switch it to not be gallons, which we think would be a big blow to the industry because the comparability out there. But they are making us do it. It's just going down to it. And I don't want to misstate. Who's our Dave? Were you involved with our calculations on that, or I don't know if we have anybody. I'm dangerous. I don't have any backup here. But I synthesize it down to, rather than us being able to take what is our average gas quality and components in our system, they wanted it more real time at each facility's dispenser, and so. Even though we're putting the same gas quality in, depending on where it's what it may have changed to or blended to by the time it gets to the actual dispensing facility, causes us to calculate things just slightly different.
But when Questar came in, and originally it was GGE was based on like it was something to do with the refinery content of gas. I mean, there's documents that it wasn't, the GGE that was being used wasn't based on Questar's BTUs, it was some other thing.
Well, the formula it takes into consideration our BTU, absolutely, always has. It's the gas gallon equivalent of this, it has to because of
Well, I know it has to, but if you go back and you look at some of those things that were filed, they were based on the refinery content of gasoline from like the Chevron refinery or something.
It could have
like
been
that.
A comparison.
I have to
look at your documents.
Okay.
Because we have typically, when we've gone down and I've done the presentations, I say, okay, this is what your BTU value is of this much wood, of this much oil, of this much coal, of this much natural gas. And we recognize that natural gas, depending on your altitude, has a different amount that is going to fit within a square foot. Okay, and we also know that we have different quality of gas, meaning your BTUs that are in it, your methanes, your ethanes, your butanes. And so that is taken into consideration when then calculating what you're going to charge for your heat value, if you will, or combustible value. And I don't know the people that got hold of the
But did the prices go up on January 1st at the LNG because the BTU?
Do you remember when we had the change?
Or whenever it was, in January it says. Because it would have had to go up like 10%.
I know we went to the pumps and complied accordingly, and I didn't have to do it, so I don't know what. We can find that out.
Yeah, because like what you said, if that's true, if you have a GGE here, and then you go up to Park City based on pressure, but there, if you're paying the same price at the pumps, then it wouldn't be a fair... It would be...
Before I get into more of what I don't know precisely, let us come and we can explain to you why or what's causing the variation between what, and my understanding is there's a difference between our 90th South pump and our pump that's out here at...
But do they charge the same price?
No, when I say there's a difference.
There's a difference in price.
Okay. Because of the calculations and the formula that they're requiring. We are compliant. I do know that. That's something that we have to be reporting.
But in talking to our engineers, they, even though the prices are different at the pump, they are paying the same amount for the energy that they're
paying. Right.
Yep. It's just, didn't we switch from volume to pounds?
It was weight versus volume.
It was, yeah. We were doing, trying to come up with a volume metric calculation. And the state said, no, you must measure this based on weight. And so that's what caused us to have to go back and kind of tweak the calculation.
But ultimately, the way the commission sets rates, which is on decatherm, all decatherms are the same amount. We aren't charging any different as far as the decatherm.
It was January.
That's a good detail. Because we'll follow up if it's different from what Kelly just explained. We'll come and tell you. I don't know. I can't remember other things that jump out as changes. There's a lot of similarity, as you see, from one year to the next.
I was on page 4-7. One of the graphs got cut off, and I just was wondering how low it went for the northern peak day pressures. And this graph seemed really different from last year's graph. I mean, and I was wondering what was the reason.
So see how it's that figure 4.5 on the bottom of page 4-7. So what we're showing there, that's system pressures in our Summit Wasatch County system. And right now we are projecting actually on a peak day with growth on top of what we've seen last year. So we're about 10% growth over actual usage last year. On a peak day, we're actually showing that we have some concerns on system pressures up there right now.
Yeah, I was just curious because it's cut off at the bottom. That was the only thing.
Yeah, it goes lower. So typically our minimum design pressure is 125. So we design all of our district regulator stations, which serve the IHP system. We design them with 125 pounds inlet pressure for our design day. They will operate with lower inlet pressures. They just don't quite have the same capacity. Most of our stations have more capacity than is required on a peak day, so we can still deliver enough gas supply at lower inlet pressures, but that is our design point, so that's why the graph was cut off there. But it is an area that we are
doing
watching.
A project or?
We do a project. So we have in the D&G action plan, there's a feeder line 99 extension. And so next year, we are planning to extend the feeder line from, terminates currently around the Francis area. I think it's Victory Ranch is the subdivision. We're going to be extending the feeder line 99 from Francis area down to Heber. And that will substantially increase our pressures on the high pressure system in Heber and Charleston particularly.
Well, I had a couple questions, and this is a kind of just a philosophical question. You know, on the integrity management, the TIMP, the transmission integrity management has been in place for over 10 years now. And when does it get to the point where something is just status quo and not new? You know what I mean? I mean, if something is just business as usual, why would you separate it out into something? I mean, they do come up with new things and whatever, but what's the point when it's just doing business. You know, because
I don't know exactly what you're.
Well, because you know you have a balancing account for integrity management, and so it's dollar for dollar, and so when does
you guys, but I can't know.
Yeah, but when does it? When I was just kind of curious.
Good question. I mean, the whole reason why we have that tracker is because the costs are fluctuating. You know,
but they're not. They're not. I mean, you look at the numbers, and the costs don't. I mean, what your forecasts are exactly the same for the years, and it's just a, you know.
Well, maybe for the next couple of years, but I think as the FAMSA rules get more and more strict, you're seeing the overall trend is an increase in costs.
No, I see. Kelly's point.
Well, I see. You know, like if you had to all of a sudden say, okay, we got to do inline inspections on a bigger area. Right. You know, that's fine. I mean, but some of these things are like just business, like buying software systems. I mean, you got to do that for your business anyways, for line locations. Mm-hmm. And then you know, you look at some of the costs that are here. And you're going, well, wouldn't it be more cost-effective to manage it as just part of your business? Like, there's cost for a standby crew for integrity management. Well, you know, a lot of the work is scheduled. And so what do you need a standby crew for the whole year, you know, every hour of the year that's in the balancing account, as opposed to, you know, managing it as part of just the business, you know?
And I'm making an assumption here. I think that the standby crew... So part of our integrity management program on the high pressure system, the transmission is whenever there is an excavation around one of our lines, we have somebody there watching to make sure that they don't damage it. So that's the standby versus having a crew just.
That's the standby crew. It's not one that's just waiting to be called. That's their job.
But I do see your point. That's it.
Yeah, but if they don't,
that's a routine part of business. Why would break?
Yeah, why would you break it out? I mean, when I was working for Kern River, we always had somebody monitor an excavation.
Right. It's how they plan the budget. But I want to make sure that everyone's on the same page with everyone, because I was trying to follow you for a minute, and now
it's just a question.
It's a good question. We break our dollars. So I haven't titled them capital or expense yet. But we break our dollars into essentially two different categories. As it relates to integrity management or distribution, and that relates to the distribution or the transmission. The expense side, for everybody's memory, started before the capital. The capital soon followed, but we didn't have any mechanism on the capital side for several years. But the expense side happened in the 90s, when we came to the commission over...
And
so it may even been longer than 10 years ago. It might not.
It was 2004, I think it was.
Okay. And it wasn't the 90s, it's the early 2000s. And the Congress first came out and said, you've got 7 years. Yeah. We came in between a general rate case and we said, hey, this is a brand new thing, just required by federal law, and can we have a deferred account? And we asked for that. All the parties weighed in. The commission approved a deferred account. Then in the next general rate case, we came along and said, okay, can we start to amortize this account? And we continued to keep the account. And that's really what I'm hearing you ask a question on right now. That was brand new. It was incremental. We didn't know anything about it. Has this type of expense, and I'm still talking expense here, has it matured to the point that we're good enough at being able to say this is what the forecast is? Mm-hmm. And we may be able to be there in the transmission side. I don't know that for sure, and I have to refer and be able to report back to you. The distribution still seems to be very volatile. And when I say volatile, it hasn't had the volatility hasn't been saying thou shalt go and do this, but it's being fought over at Congress. And whether or not are they going to make us go back and retrofit and put excess flow valves on everything that already exists, uh-huh, or is it just going to be something that's already going forward? Those would be expenses. So that's what we did on the expense side. After a while, to be safe with what we were learning on our expense and a review of the system, we realized that we needed to be replacing the system.
the replacing of the system has become a tracker on IHP, and now, I mean, a little bit on the IHP, about $10 million, as well as the $55 million related to the high pressure. Your question goes to the expense side. And I mean, that one could certainly be explored. We've enjoyed it, and I'll say why. One, the expenses are covered. I think they're reviewed. It also makes it so that we do our best efforts, but we have not done a good job at being able to estimate exactly what those expenses are in any given year, and we've had a pretty significant adjustment in this last case as far as what the amortization ends up being. And so we felt like we've been able to certainly have coverage for a federally mandated thing, but it's absolutely an issue that could be discussed, because you could say, hey, you buy software every year, you don't have a tracker account for the software, and you have a whole lot of other expenses, and if people want...
Yeah, well, it was just that, you know, it's like, because eventually something just becomes part of business, and...
We keep track of it separate. Yeah. That's right. I mean, they have a completely separate department now that has those responsibilities. That was an incremental, and we were really key to make sure that we didn't want to have anything that had been included in a general rate case be something that was different as it raises. But it's timely. I mean, it would be something we'd probably take up in a general rate case, and we could talk about it.
It was just a question that came out, because I was looking at the numbers at the bottom, and you looked at the numbers in the past, and you
know, I'm not that familiar with memorizing the numbers. I know we're reporting on it on a regular basis now, but we'll wait on it.
I am trying to remember the numbers in the past, but they don't seem to me like there's, like we've, you know, plateaued or hit a certain spend. I mean, it seems to me like they're
continuing to go up.
Up every year.
Expense?
Well, the...
The expense, yeah.
Because in the next 3 years, it's like the same number for the next 3 years. But even for like transmission stuff, yeah. So I mean, it's just a question. I mean,
you probably called us on how well a job we really tried to go and do a forecast on, and it might have been. Let's leave it flat. So I don't know how.
Because you know, it was just that issue of, you know, you have the old PHMSA 192 rules that are before integrity management, and you still have to comply with all those. And but then it's, you know, it's just like operator qualification. You didn't come in for that, and that's just part of doing business. And you know,
no, it's a good discussion. I mean, a good question. I mean, one of the things you'd weigh in there is that right now we're not incentivized one way or the other, I don't think, on ever trying to game a system. I'm being really frank. In between rate cases, we have a lot of motivation sometimes to say, okay, what's the level they ought to do? I mean, that's just the reality of life. Sure. That area has no, and I kind of like that. It's a safety area. They just know they're going to go forward and do what they ought to do and not get tempted to say, wow, you know, if you can cut back on expenses this year, we can make an extra $1 million on our net income and meet a new goal or whatever.
You shouldn't say that your company would do that.
I know. I didn't because we don't have it that way.
Yeah.
But I do know that it's absolutely it's an incentive.
Yeah.
And you folks have already said, you know what, your income-related things, you don't get to have those in rates. And so I think that's a good signal to us, too. I mean, I'm right down at the roots of what runs a company and how they make good decisions.
Sure, yeah.
I think that's a good thing that's come out of that tractor. Good discussion.
Okay.
I have a quick question. I've heard Rick mention a couple times. You've obviously written some thing about the park and loan service that they offer. Have you received any further updates on when that thing's coming on? Like, so much the conversation, so many conversations about storms and things like that. Is that still kind of a wait and see proposition?
Oh, no, they'll tell you what it's going to be. It's just, when do you believe in the
Yeah, okay.
So they're saying October, that was the latest.
Latest I've heard of that.
But we did the park and loan. I think we wrote about that just because it was a one-time thing. We put all the gas in, got all the gas out. That happened during the last IRP year. The actual main contract hasn't started yet,
right,
and won't until they can demonstrate that they can do injections and withdrawals, and right now they're saying October.
But before that, they said April.
Right.
And then
right.
April came and didn't happen.
That's why I asked if there was any updates, because I'm thinking, are we having anything?
Yeah, but they'll always have a date in mind, it's just whether it's going to be for real. we don't know. And so we're, I guess, planning on seeing something during the next IRP year. We don't know exactly when. And if we don't have it, potentially there'll be other storage short-term options that we assume we'll spend some money on. But maybe not if we're able to get everything into storage. It's just kind of unknown right now how much we're going to be able to get above our allocation. So, and what production's going to do.
Could you explain the chart on Exhibit 5.1? This was something that was, I think, new, 2014 cluster average peak demand versus annual demand. I didn't quite understand what this was.
It's the Scott cluster graph. Mm-hmm.
Want to take your stab? Yeah.
So what we do, the RFP, we put those 145 packages in the model, we run the model, and then the output of the model is then put into this cluster scenario. So each of those points represent draws that are alike in terms of peak demand and annual, the peak day, design peak day and the annual demand. And what we then do is I then show those to Tina, and she says, yeah, in the SAS graph, they're numbered. And I couldn't get the numbers into this graph, but those are all numbered. And so I can show her one, and she says, well, that looks like about where we want to be as far as peak day gas goes and our annual demand. What that means is each of those points represents a group of packages of those 145 that were continuously selected to meet demand in the RFP piece of the analysis. And then she and Will, Brett Bacher, they look at those gas packages. And what will happen is many of those will reoccur over and over again, meaning the model, the way they're priced, the model likes those items over and over again. And then there are some that the model likes less and less. And so this graph attempts to show how the model grouped like packages of gas, how it grouped like scenarios where the peak day and the annual demand were met in a similar fashion. And we choose these clusters. These clusters represent packages of gas. They represent scenarios, and within scenarios we have packages of gas. And it's from those like packages of gas that we make our selection when we choose packages of gas to purchase for the coming year.
Thanks. This was new, because I, yeah.
So did we pick one of those packages?
Yep.
Which one did we pick?
It's not numbered, so we can't show it. But we try. The problem is to make sure we're not selecting something that ends up with way too much gas, that's on an outlier, or not enough, or basically to use it, it would need demand that was 20% higher than normal. It might happen, but we can always buy additional gas for that. We don't want to have baseload gas we can't use. So
this one was a little unusual because if you look on the vertical axis, it only goes up to 1.15, and our design peak day is 1.28. So these clusters that it chose, or the way the model solved the problem, it doesn't show that design peak day. But like Tina said, if it did show those, then we would end up purchasing gas that in the end we're not going to use, because we would be purchasing for a design peak day, and we want to make sure that the gas will meet design peak day. But we don't necessarily want to buy for design peak day going into it, because we'll leave a lot of gas on the table that we'll never use.
I can't think of any other new ones. So we're just asking questions.
On the, is it a three?
Three?
Yeah. Well, you've got year-end additions to the GS system.
Dave, you can answer
3.1?
This is your, Artie has a copy of it, you can see it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's his copy.
Well, as I look at that, you've got some years where you added quite a few, and other years where you had not so many additions, and yet your forecast shows pretty high level of additions every year, higher than the average for the last 20 years.
Well, yeah?
Any reason why you're having such high additions to the GS system?
Starting, are you talking about the forecasted years?
Yeah. I mean, you've only got 7 years in the past where you've been over that 23 mark, and then every year after that, you're adding
way over that 23 mark.
Because that's the economic picture that's emerging as based on the recovery from the recession. Utah's one of the leading states in economic recovery and population growth and job growth. So there's a lot of factors that are affecting that that have changed over the past 5 years. You've got, first of all, you've got Utah's population is growing as opposed to a lot of other states where it's diminishing. People are leaving the state. You've got a lot of pent-up demand, the household formations, rate is increasing. The affordability index is up, so people that were postponing buying homes, living with their parents, and then out looking for homes. This forecast is based on, it's based off of housing starts. And the housing starts projections that we use come from Global Insight. They're looking not only at a regional picture, but a national picture. So they're looking at jobs migration, people coming into Utah for jobs. They're looking at household formation within Utah. Within Utah, that's driven by the demographic. These are mostly single dwelling homes as opposed to multi-dwelling because Utah's demographic still leads people to look for single dwelling homes. You've got an economy that's emerging from the recession that's different than it was going into the recession. Utah's an attractive state, more so than prior to the recession. And so the housing demand is driven by that. I mean, it's a forecast that's based on economic conditions right now and where they appear to be headed in the future.
I don't want you to think that you aren't the first person to challenge
Okay, so
how? And actually, management, he's been grilled all the way up the line on it. The fun thing is that except for the period of time when nobody in this nation/state was able to predict how far it was going to drop or a point it would finally turn around, he's got a pretty good track record. Dave does. Using the information that he has, we still will admit this is a forecast. So.
Well, the further out you get the forecast, one to 2 years, we're good. 3 to 5, who knows what's going to happen. So
there's things that could change with it, but that's currently what the economic indicators are. So buy low, sell high.
What?
Property.
Can you explain the system diagram on 7.1?
That comes out of the send-out model.
What is it?
Well, for the most part, all the blue barrels around the outside represent cost of service gas coming from Wexpro. There are several blue barrels in the middle, and those represent company storage. There's three in the middle that are the three Clay Basin contracts, and then the other three represent Chalk Creek, Leroy, and Colville. And there's another one there that represents Rickman. And then the green boxes represent purchased gas. And then the yellow pentagons represent demand destinations. So there's one kind of right in the heart in it, set off to the left a little bit, and that would be Salt Lake City, the Valley. And then there's some others that represent some off-system gas as well as St. George. And so stuff on, then if you're familiar with the Questar pipeline chart, we always call it the inverted H because there's a northern system, there's Clay Basin in the middle, and then a southern system. And you have to use your imagination, but that's what it's tried to be modeled after, is the stuff to the extreme right represents the cost of service gas coming in off the northern system, and the things towards the bottom represent the southern system, and then storage in the middle with our demand center to the left.
We can animate it, and it could be like Pac-Man.
So where are we supposed to learn or take away from that?
I'm told to put it in the IRP, so I do what I'm told.
I'll answer that. It's a complicated situation that has a lot of constraints. You can't just have all the gas show up, all the Wexpro gas that's not pathed correctly if we don't have transportation to take it. Okay. You know, and so a model without knowing some of these constraints would potentially make erroneous decisions. That's my take on it. Constraint map, is that good?
Yeah. That's how Sendout is seeing the data that is put into the model is loosely in this situation. That's how it's trying to move gas to get to the math.
That's why I brought up the beer. Beer is how I understood it. The weights and measures thing. But not everybody understood.
So another question.
Yeah, I've got a question on page 7.4 on the no notice transportation.
I hope you never leave, Carol, because you make this so much more interesting. You read it and you have questions. What would we do if you know?
Well, it's not that I understand it, but it is.
No, it's great.
Okay, so in the last paragraph there, it says it utilizes no notice transportation every day throughout the heating season. And then it says Questar used notice NNT 86 days during the heating season to reduce nominations. Mm-hmm. So that's the on the graph, that's like the red part, right? On the graph 7.1. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then it says Questar used NNT the 57 days to provide for additional storage and withdrawal. But last year was 65 days. And was there a difference in the days of the heating season, or was it...
No, it's an adjustment between nominations and actual. And so, just depending on how you happen to nominate and how close you are, how good you are at forecasting temperatures and demand, you have to. The adjustment happens at Clay Basin using no-notice storage.
You're just saying why does the total number of days...
Yeah, why is it different? Yeah, because it's...
And it might have been, you know, we might have slightly used a different window period of time. There might have been a couple of days off there.
Yeah, because the previous year, I think that in the previous one, the sentence was not quite... you tried to change a sentence because it wasn't really reading correctly in last year's, but then...
Still isn't, maybe?
The Questar used NNT the 57 days. It's like the maybe remaining 57 or something.
Or just 57 days, isn't it? Do you want to look at this one?
Yeah, anyways, it was just...
I've got it right here. I'm going to try and look at last year's.
Yeah, because it was maybe the heating season days. What, you know, heating season is just the time period. It just seemed like it was...
Well, there are some days that potentially we did well.
No, it was storage wasn't... every day, one way or the other.
We just took a time period. We decided to change the winter periods. Something.
Anyway, so that was just an observation.
Some people change daylight savings times.
But then
it was a long winter.
So then, in the last, and you were talking.
It is. It does depend on what you define as the heating season. Right. If we used exactly the right days.
It sounds like we have changed the dates, but then you find that one out.
Okay.
I mean, that's just the intuitive thing because we can't. We aren't into creating new calendar days. I mean, we create a lot of things and we do forecasts, but we can't pull that one off. But that's a good catch, I'll say that.
And to be honest, what I think it is because it seems unrealistic, I think the 86 days probably carried over from last year. That was probably a typo that you caught. The 86 days is probably wrong on this year's, because I'm looking back and it's 86 and 86. We probably...
Yeah, because I was thinking, wow, yeah, because there's a number here, this 203,542 on the next page.
That's the maximum. That is the same.
That's
our maximum limit, so that number is the same.
Okay, because it was for an injection the previous year.
Once we go beyond that 203,542, that's our total no-notice...
That's what I was figuring, something like that.
Then it goes to an imbalance on the pipeline.
Oh, okay.
So that is the most, the highest number you'll ever see on there. It means we maxed it out. But the 86, I can get you that actual days, but the 86 probably changed.
We read it so many times and we don't...
Well, I know, yes. We have that problem here too, don't worry.
Actually, I do remember, I think we did catch that.
Sometimes we catch it and it doesn't get made.
This is so good. We can find out who didn't get it changed. Make sure they feel it.
It's probably me.
It's probably me on the on the smart board.
I'll give it. That's a good catch.
I'll take credit for that one.
Well, on page 3.4, I just had a question. How do you figure out this interruptible, how much you have available? Because, you know, it says you do your analysis every year, and...
Are you talking about the 58,000?
The 50,000 of interruptible transportation, 8,000, yeah, of interruptible sales, yeah.
Yeah, so the interruptible sales number comes from a daily send-out report that we get monthly from our gas management, gas control. We get a daily send-out report, and they have those the send-out segmented by interruptible confirmed sales. And so we look at, we just review the prior year, and we look at the highest daily send-out and what the interruptible send-out was in that particular day, and that's the best surrogate we can find for what's available on interruptible sale. The other one, the 50,000, is just based on the transportation contract, the amount of, from from the transportation service. Just those are contract numbers.
So that would, and there's contracts, and they have like a peak day that they would.
Yeah, it's based on it's. I mean that number can fluctuate. I mean sometimes it's higher than 50,000, but 50,000 may. That's what we know we have available for buyback in the event of a curtailment. So that's a sound number that we know that we can rely on. In some cases, it may be conservative, but it's a stable number, and that's what Scott uses in his model.
As a potential, though, because that slightly has changed what could happen now, because coming out of the last general rate case, they do not have to sell it to us.
Oh, right, yeah.
That's something they negotiated, and we agreed. And so it's something we still calculated and had a decision whether or not to do it, so we put that as a potential there, but that all could be based on their willingness. And hence, gas supply has to be ready to be able to do things if that doesn't happen.
So in essence, even though you have this number here and it's, you know, it could be conservative or it could be, you know, that's right on, this next year really, well, even as of today, since they don't have to sell it, it doesn't really...
It is not a guarantee. That's the point.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Is that all? Any other questions?
We anticipate you may have other questions as you get to read it again or for the first time. And welcome those. In the scheduling conference, for those that weren't there beforehand, the commission will be getting out notice that people that want to make comments about this have until the 13th of August. If you have data requests, we'll be responding to them. And you can have data requests anytime, but if you have things that can help you in the preparatory, in preparation for your making comments, do get those to us. And then there's a reply period that will go to September 12th. And then I don't want to give the impression that it brings to an end, because I think the IRP is any document or thing that we file, it's one that we have consistent reports on it quarterly, and I know people have brought up questions, and we've had concerns that we've focused on more specifically as we go throughout the year, so we'll keep doing that. We look for feedback. We'll again try to put together the same process. I kind of like this year's, and maybe we can be a little more proactive come December, January time, and get feedback from all of you on focused issues that you'd like us to come and present on. I hold out the Monticello one as one that we did. People wanted to have a little better understanding of gas supply and how that works. Not gas supply, but the gas control area. We'll respond to this. So these are just things we're doing on a going forward process.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. Let us be known that we're done early because we